and welcome to Energy Matters, the brand new podcast from SMS, where we discuss the most pressing and most promising matters of the energy sector today and why they matter to the world around us. Our podcast will hone in on some of the industry's most talked about topics, not least the race to reach net zero carbon emissions and the huge importance of energy system innovation in getting there. So in our very first episode of Energy Matters, I'm going to be chatting to renewable energy expert Killian O'Connor. Killian and I talk about the game-changing role that smart energy technology, together with innovative financing solutions, can play in tackling one of the biggest issues that faces the energy industry, as well as society as a whole. We're talking about fuel poverty. In our conversation, we touch on the definitions of fuel poverty, how the problem has been exacerbated by the COVID-19 pandemic, and some of the government policies aimed at alleviating the growing problem. However, our main focus is an optimistic one, including how technology and private and public sector collaboration are now offering real and viable solutions to improve the affordability of energy in tandem with decarbonisation. Before we get to the chat then, a little bit about my interviewee Killian. Killian, who is Operations Director at SMS, is a vastly experienced renewable energy engineer, having worked in the sector for more than a decade. Killian heads up the team behind SMS's FlexiGrid aggregation platform, which intelligently controls distributed energy technology assets, including domestic battery storage and solar generation. Incidentally, FlexiGrid is the platform that sits behind SMS's new financed renewable energy solution called Solo Power, which aims to assist the UK's social housing landlords with their fuel poverty and carbon reduction targets. So, without further ado, I hope you enjoy today's chat. Hi, Killian. Thanks for joining me today.
Hey, Elliot. Thanks for having me on.
So we're here to talk about the issue of fuel poverty in the UK, how it's closely linked with Britain's decarbonisation plans, and importantly, the possible market solutions that could mean much fewer people have to live in fuel-poor, highly carbon-emitting homes. So all of that then really begs the question, what actually is fuel poverty? Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, very broadly speaking, fuel poverty can be considered as being not able to afford your energy bills and therefore keep your home warm. There are different definitions of fuel poverty depending on where you live in the UK, but latest studies indicate that a total of 3.5 million homes are fuel poor. That's about 10% of the homes in England and Wales, a quarter of all homes in Scotland, and staggeringly up to 42% of homes in Northern Ireland. And we're really talking a significant portion of UK population that can't currently afford their energy bills.
Yeah, I mean, those numbers, I suppose, to the uninitiated, to fuel poverty, are probably quite alarming, quite surprising. We're looking quite a lot of people, as you said, 42% in Northern Ireland, a quarter in Scotland, 10% in England, who might be forced into debt to power their homes, or worse, perhaps have their health put at risk if they can't afford to turn on the heating over winter. So, you know, the UK is a highly developed country. How did we get here exactly? What's causing these high rates of fuel poverty?
Yeah, I think that, you know, there are quite a number of reasons really why we get there, and the figures are quite high. I think Ofgem's energy price cap has helped curb the annual increases in energy prices, but the fact still remains that, you know, particularly in lower income households, they spend a large portion of their budget on heating the homes, and as a result, they're more likely to be pushed into fuel poverty. The global pandemic has probably exacerbated this quite a bit, with increasing numbers of people spending a lot more time at home, and therefore, you know, requiring more heat and electricity in the houses. And, you know, some of those people are also out of work and not earning as much. So that's really accelerated the issue, I think, and brought it to the fore a bit more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to add to this, the UK has an aging housing stock, which is generally quite poorly insulated, and energy inefficient. Nearly two-thirds of the homes in the UK, that's about 12 million homes, fall below the C grade in EPC ratings, which again is quite high, and points to the fact that the housing stock really needs to be upgraded in terms of efficiency overall.
So this is surely having then an adverse effect on affordability of energy, it's also having an adverse effect on the environment in terms of carbon emissions the UK housing stock is producing. So with that in mind, it seems to me anyway that this should create a double incentive for government and people in charge of looking at the UK housing stock to tackle climate change and fuel poverty together as a joined up approach. Is that something that we're seeing?
Yeah, without a doubt. According to the annual greenhouse gas emissions data, 65 million tonnes of CO2 was produced by UK homes in 2018. That's more than what was emitted by power stations in the UK over the same time period. Wow. So, that's quite significant. So the impact of inefficient homes on carbon emissions is hugely significant. And it's not just about carbon emissions and fuel poverty. You mentioned, a double incentive there, but there are even less visible issues out there. Sitting in a cold, damp home worrying about how you're going to pay your next energy bill can have an untold impact on mental and physical well-being as well. Mm-hmm. So, by tackling home energy efficiency challenges, we're tackling a whole host of social and environmental issues head on as well. So, it's not just that dual approach. There's a lot more that can be solved.
I suppose public health comes into that mix there as well.
Yeah, massively. There's a huge amount of knock-on effects to improving efficiency of homes right across the board. And to your question about a joined up UK government strategy to tackle both of these challenges simultaneously, it's been quite hard to achieve historically, as fuel poverty is a devolved issue and slightly definitions on how it's treated and approaches and targets, depending on whether you're in England, Wales, Scotland or Northern Ireland. And we can see the rates of fuel poverty are quite different in all those jurisdictions as well. But, however, since the UK central government announced its target to reach net zero emissions by 2050, and we've seen the white paper recently as well, the discussion around how to reduce the carbon impact of the housing sector has come to the fore. So in terms of tackling that, the UK government has brought in a number of policies in recent years, but these have largely been focused on assisting low-income families paying their bills rather than focusing on improving energy efficiency of the homes. So, it's like continuously spending money on filling potholes and roads rather than resurfacing the entire road.
Yeah, like a sticking plaster, you could say.
Yeah, exactly. You're just throwing money at a problem rather than looking at it in a holistic view, I think. And there's a current policy disconnect, I think, and that means, according to the Committee on Fuel Poverty, the government's key targets to raise EPC ratings of fuel poor households to ban D by 25 and then raising it again to ban C by 2030, that's going to be missed unless policies are revised and additional funding made available. I think that's very important. And with a particular focus in ramping up spending on home energy efficiency improvements through technology-led programs. And I think that's the important bit there, is through technology-led programs rather than just fabric upgrades. We need to implement technology here as well to really improve the ratings of the homes across the board.
So you mentioned important few things I'd like to pick up on, namely the technology-led solutions to this problem and indeed the funding and the financing which will be needed to roll those out at scale. But just to briefly touch on policy, and we don't want to get too bogged down in government policy here because we want to look at market solutions. But just a note, you mentioned the energy white paper, and that has been announced recently. So there's a little bit of an update there on policies. So yeah, since the Committee on Fuel Poverty announced that annual report last summer and made those recommendations, the government announced its white paper in December with various fuel poverty policy commitments, and indeed fuel poverty and lowering the cost of energy as part of net zero seems to have taken center stage, which is positive and encouraging to see. I've got that report there in front of me, so I'll just list a few of the commitments that they've made there. Increased financial support for tackling fuel poverty, so that does indeed to some extent look at what Fuel Poverty Committee were calling for. A new future home standard to ensure that all new build homes will be, quote, zero carbon ready, unquote. And there's some various consultations there for this year, 2021, on regulatory measures to improve the energy performance at home. So that all seems like, you know, a big statement from the government and encouraging as it is. It will remain to be seen how effective those policies are, and only time will tell in that regard, right?
Yeah, and look, it's great to see all of those new measures outlined in the white paper, and we hope that they will bring the changes required. There are existing government supports in place, including the Green Homes Grant. You touched on smarter homes or future energy homes as well in the white paper. That's great. I think, you know, improving insulation, upgrading windows, doors, etc. Those kind of fabric upgrades are a given, and it's what everybody thinks of when you talk about improving efficiency in the home. But low carbon technologies can also play a significant role in the efficiency, comfort, living standards in the home, all of those things. Technologies like solar panels, smart home batteries, heat pumps. And I think we need to mention those specifically here as well. But the main challenge with those technologies to date has been that they've been prohibitively expensive for consumers to afford on their own. Especially those who are either in the low income bracket or exposed to fuel poverty. And although there is government funding in place, to date, I guess it's been insufficient in terms of public funding available to support local authorities and housing associations and indeed individuals in performing whole home energy efficiency upgrades. So, you know, it's great that it's outlined in the white paper that more money will be spent on it, and there's it's not just about spending money. There's actually a strategy in terms of, like we said, EPC upgrades, but future homes as well, and design of new homes as well will certainly help things.
So let's dive a little bit more into that funding and financing aspect then. You mentioned some of the barriers then to accessing these low carbon technologies. One, for the consumer, these technologies are prohibitively expensive for most consumers to access off their own backs. But indeed, housing associations, local authorities have also been consistently calling for more financial support, particularly from central government. So, you know, given the sheer volume of capital required to roll out these technologies, which should hopefully address fuel poverty significantly, as well as the carbon emissions of the housing stock, it does mean that the private sector is going to have to play a big part as well, doesn't it? So probably not just in terms of financing, but actually the technology and innovative energy solutions to help organizations like the social housing, those involved in the social housing sector, to deliver those fuel poverty targets.
Yeah, certainly. And you're 100% right. We can't expect, you know, the government to fund this thing entirely, and we can't expect everything to come from public coffers. That's a huge amount of money, and the private sector is a huge part to play in all of this. And, you know, there's no reason why sustainable business models can't be based around the funding and deployment of net zero assets. SMS, to your point, has a long track record in energy asset funding, including over £1 billion invested in smart meters, data and energy efficiency over the past 25 years. To meet the growing demand for financing of the low carbon assets needed to meet the UK's net zero targets, assets such as batteries and renewable generation technologies, which we've touched on, SMS is now offering a fully funded solution that would enable deployment of these assets at no upfront cost, and therefore removing the common financial constraints associated with their delivery. You know, we're also able to fully support the delivery of these assets through our longstanding energy services and engineering division, which is able to design, supply, install, and optimize these technologies as part of our comprehensive sustainability strategy. And specifically for the social housing providers, which we touched on, we've recently launched Solo Power, which offers this package of funding, delivery, and strategy services in order to roll out smart solar and battery storage solutions across the housing portfolios at zero upfront cost. Again, you know, those kind of public finances on the local authority side and social housing side are really stretched with COVID-19 over the last year. So helping these landlords reduce energy bills of their residents, addressing fuel poverty at no upfront cost, I think is a big step forward in terms of private financing coming in to fill that void and fill that gap for them, where they may have had funding in the past to deliver carbon zero strategies on their housing or property portfolio. That funding gap is widening, and I think the private sector needs to step in.
So there's a lot to unpack there in terms of this low carbon technology funding and delivery solution you just mentioned. But before we unpack that, can you just explain a bit about why the social housing sector in particular has the potential to be a huge beneficiary of such a service like this, and the wider important role that social housing sector participants and housing associations have to play in the effort of reducing fuel poverty and carbon emissions together?
Well, if you look at the social housing market, there are millions upon millions of homes right across the UK that are owned by local authorities or social landlords, housing associations. That market is disproportionately affected by fuel poverty. It's something that needs to be addressed, and needs to be addressed pretty quickly if we have to get those EPC ratings up to a level C by 2030. So that needs to be done quickly. It's an area that really needs to be targeted to help alleviate fuel poverty and you know, increase those living and comfort levels of those that are, like I said, disproportionately affected. And again, it's those types of social landlords that are really feeling the burden and the pain of the recent pandemic. And I think the way out of it is to, you know, to build back through green initiatives and net zero strategies to get us to that point.
Okay, so let's pick up then on the solo power package of services that you've mentioned there for the social housing sector, which essentially is offering the end-to-end funding and delivery of a low-carbon technology solution to fuel poverty. Can you explain a little bit more about how those services are working together to actually effectively reduce carbon, but then effectively reduce bills as well?
Yeah, and I think, you know, within SMS, we try to make things as easy as possible for social landlords to achieve those net zero ambitions that they have. We're seeing a lot of local authorities stating their own net zero targets, which, you know, the UK as a whole is stating 2050, but we're seeing local authorities with even earlier dates and targets, which is great to see. And we want to help and make it as simple as possible for them to achieve that. So Solo Power, which I mentioned, is a fully funded smart solar and battery storage solution for that social housing market. The service includes design, financing, supply and install, optimization, metering and billing support, and then repowering and recycling of the solar and battery storage assets when they reach their end of life. I generally like to break it down into five key points. Number one, there's no upfront cost to the social landlord. Instead, they sign up to a long-term PPA or power purchase agreement with SMS for any solar generation that's delivered behind the meter. The landlord then recovers those costs directly from the residents. So again, that no upfront cost being key there. Number two, residents' electricity costs will be reduced by approximately 25% to standard electricity supply tariffs. And their supply will be decarbonized by up to 90%. So you've got, you know, huge savings in terms of carbon reduction and also price to the end consumer. Three, the resident is free to choose whatever supplier they want for any additional electricity purchase from the grid. So, you know, some element of the generation will come from your solar panels and your battery. Any remaining grid purchase will come from any supplier that they choose. And I think this is really important in the context of not locking the resident into a long-term energy supply contract and give them the freedom to move about. Four, the entire system is operated and managed remotely by SMS. So that removes any need for the landlord or resident to interact with the solar or battery system. Everything just sits there quietly in the background doing its job, and you know, there's no behavioral change required. And you know,
that's a really important point, isn't it, Killian? Because I think traditionally one of the, you know, the biggest barriers to increasing energy efficiency has been that behavioral change element to improve the performance of the house. So that's completely removed by this solution.
Yeah, so and that's why we combined the solar PV arrays with the battery systems, that the battery acts as that buffer, that we control and manage it, and we can take away that hassle from the consumer. They don't have to, you know, cook their dinner 2 hours later in the evening because energy prices are cheaper, or, you know, earlier in the day because their solar panels are generating a lot of electricity, that the battery system acts as that smart, clever buffer that does all of the energy shifting for them. And we do that. We do all of that in the background with our own online managed platform. So yeah, I think taking that behavioral change away is a big plus in all of this. You know, anecdotally, when any systems have been bought in the past, you tend to see a change in behavior in the initial period, but people drift back to their own habits, and we kind of try to remove that as best as possible through smart control of the platform. And I think the last point to touch on in solar power, probably most importantly in the context of this conversation we're having, it can significantly improve the EPC ratings of the social housing stock, drive down carbon emissions, and help alleviate fuel poverty. And then, you know, on top of all of that, improve living standards across the sector as a whole. So, you know, we touch on the physical and mental well-being of residents in the homes. That can all be helped by implementing smart technologies into the home.
One final question there for you then, Cillian. And I'd just like to pull out two of the headline benefits you mentioned at the end regarding the ability of solar power to reduce carbon emissions of the social housing stock. And also, crucially, in the context of fuel poverty, which is what we're talking about, lower the cost of energy for the resident. Looking at the recently launched publicity for solar power, the solution is offering up to a 90% reduction in home carbon emissions, correct me if I'm wrong, and a 25% reduction in energy bills for the end consumer. Those aren't insignificant reductions by any means, and if indeed achievable, could make a huge difference to both landlord and resident. Can you tell me a little bit more about what those percentages are based on and how they might be realized?
So the electricity cost reduction of 25%, that's based on standard supply tariffs that are out there at the moment. So we have proven that we can reduce the cost by 25% compared to those standard tariffs. The 90% reduction in carbon comes from, well, one element of generating your own electricity from your solar panels and using that within the home. So you're not purchasing grid electricity that has been generated by, you know, a gas or a coal station, for example. So you're really decarbonizing your electricity supply within the home. And there's another element that is added by the battery system, is any additional electricity can be purchased at nighttime. So you basically charge the battery overnight when the grid carbon intensity is typically much lower than the daytime. So you're bringing down that that element of grid carbon intensity as well. So and that's they're not just you know, it's not just a desktop exercise. We've done this in the field on several demonstration sites to date. So we've got several solar and battery systems operating in the field, and we've run the numbers, and we're actually demonstrating this in the field. So that's where those figures are coming from.
Thanks a lot, Cillian. It's been great talking to you, and some really exciting developments there, which could really make positive contribution to fuel poverty and carbon emissions. So thanks so much.
Thanks, Alan. That's been great. Cheers.
Once again there to Cillian for talking to me about fuel poverty and some of the energy innovations that could go a long way towards helping alleviate the issue. If you work for a local authority, a housing association, or in any capacity with or within the social housing sector, and you are interested in SMS's solar power solution that was discussed in the podcast, then you can find out more at sms-plc.com/solar power. Finally, if you or anyone you know is affected by fuel poverty, then short of spreading the word about solar power to your local councillor or social housing landlord, then there are currently a number of government schemes that can help with paying energy bills. If you Google search SMS PLC, let's talk about fuel poverty, then you'll find a handy blog which lists these government schemes and other practical advice to help you save energy in your home. That's it for today's episode. If you enjoyed the discussion with Killian and would like to hear more conversations with industry experts on the energy issues that matter, then please subscribe to the podcast. Simply search Energy Matters in your favourite podcast app and away you go. Until the next time, stay safe and stay well.